Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Sarasvata Deva Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachade Shatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaurabhaktivinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Reading from Canto 7 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 9, Verse 13. Sarve,
hi,
ami,
sarve,
hi, ami, vidikarastava, sattva-dhamno,
sarve, hi, ami, vidikarastava, sattva-dhamno,
brahmadayo, vayami, vesha, nacho, didvantaha, Shemaya Bhutaya Utatma Sukhaya Chasya
Shemaya Bhutaya Utatma Sukhaya Chasya
Vikriditam Bhagavato Ruchiravatarai
Vikriditam Bhagavato Ruchiravatarai Savahiyami Vidhi Karasthava Satvadamno
Savahiyami Vidhi Karasthava Satvadamno
Brahmadaya vayami vesha na chodhi chamsa
Brahmadaya vayami vesha na chodhi chamsa
Shemaya bhutaya bhutatma sukhaya chasya
Shemaya bhutaya bhutama sukhaya chasya
Vikritam bhagavato uchichavatarai
Vikritam bhagavato uchichavatarai
Sarveyami vidikarastava sattva-dhamno
Sarveyami vidikarastava sattva-dhamno
Brahmadaya vayami vesha nacho dvijanta
Brahmadaya vayami vesha nacho dvijanta
Shemaya bhutaya utatma sukhaya chasya
Shemaya bhutaya utatma sukhaya chasya
Vikreditam bhagavata ruchiravat Ruchiravatare
Vikritam Bhagavato Ruchiravatare
Sarveyami Vidikarastava Sattva-dhamno
Sarveyami Vidikarastava Sattva-dhamno
Brahmadayo Vayam Vishana Chodvijanta
Brahmadayo Vayam Vishana Chodvijanta
Shemaya Bhutaya Utatma Sukhaya Chasya
Shemaya Bhutaya Utatma Sukhaya Chasya
Vikritam Bhagavato Ruchiravatare
Vikritam Bhagavato Ruchiravatare
Sarve yami vidikarastava sattva-dhamno
Sarve yami vidikarastava sattva-dhamno
Brahmadayo vayami vesana chodvijanta
Brahmadayo vayami vesana chodvijanta
Shemaya bhutaya utatma sukhaya chasya
Shemaya bhutaya utatma sukhaya chasya
Sarve,
all,
he,
certainly,
ami, these, vidikara, executors of orders, tava, your, sattva-dhamna, being always situated in the transcendental world. Brahma-adayaha, the demigods headed by Lord Brahma, Vayam, we, Eva, like, Isha, O my Lord, Na, not, Cha, and Udvijanta, who were afraid of your fearful appearance, Kshemaya, for the protection, Bhutaye, for the increase. Uta, it is said. Atma Sukhaya, for personal satisfaction by such pastimes. Cha, also. Asya, of this material world. Vikriditam, manifested Bhagavata of your Lordship, Ruchira, very pleasing Avatarai, by your incarnations. Translation: O my Lord, all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma are sincere servants of your Lordship, who are situated in a transcendental position. Therefore, they are not like us, Prahlada and his father, the demon Hiranyakasipu. Your appearance in this fearsome form is your pastime for your own pleasure. Such an incarnation is always meant for the protection and improvement of the universe. Purport: Prahlada Maharaj wanted to assert that his father and the other members of his family were all unfortunate because they were demoniac, whereas the devotees of the Lord are always fortunate because they are always ready to follow the orders of the Lord. When the Supreme Lord appears in this material world in his various incarnations, he performs two functions: saving the devotees and vanquishing the demons. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chatuskutam. Lord Nrsimhadev, for example, appeared for the protection of his devotees. Such pastimes as those of Nrsimhadev are certainly not meant to create a fearful situation for the devotees. But nonetheless, the devotees, being very simple and faithful, are afraid of the fierce incarnation of the Lord. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj, in the following prayer, requests the Lord to give up his anger. Translation: O my Lord, all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma are sincere servants of your Lordship, who are situated in a transcendental position. Therefore, they are not like us, Prahlada and his father, the demon Hiranyakasipu. Your appearance in this fearful form is your pastime for your own pleasure. Such an incarnation is always meant for the protection and improvement of the universe. In the previous verse, Prahlad was apologizing for his birth in a bad family, which made him rather unqualified to approach the Lord and offer prayers. But nevertheless, he is making an attempt. So, actually, there are two types of people in the universe. This is explained by Krishna also in Bhagavad Gita. There are the Sura and the Asura, or the people who follow the laws of the Supreme Lord or the orders of the Supreme Lord, and those who do not follow. So those who follow the orders are called the Vidikara. Vidi, of course, means rule. And those who execute the rule, implement the rule, and follow the rule, those persons are called Sura or Deva. And those living entities who reject this, they are called the Asura, or the demon. And we can see from the descriptions of Bhagavatam that these two types of persons exist in the universe from the very creation. When Lord Brahma creates the bodies for the different living entities, in the very beginning we find that there's Asura and there's Sura. And because they are different from each other, so different from each other, they're always in conflict. And that conflict starts at the beginning of Brahma's creation. It goes on throughout all the days of Lord Brahma for millions and millions of years. And sometimes the devas are victorious. Sometimes the demons temporarily get control. So there is a constant battle in the universe over control by God or control by the atheists. And this is going on at all times. We should not think that what we see is the universe. We have very limited eyes, and even though we have telescopes and other instruments to throw up into space to examine what's up there, we are seeing very little of this universe. And of course, what we see in modern science is a bunch of fiery rocks floating around in space somewhere, and a sun, which is another flaming mass of gases, etc. And we find some cold planets of gases, solidified gases, things like this. And this is what we think is the universe. And we think maybe there could be some sort of form of life like us up there, somewhere in some distant planet, if they have some water and it's at the right temperature, then perhaps there's some life someplace. But
maybe some little bacteria or something. But they don't even think there could be anyone better than us around the whole universe. So therefore our conception is quite limited. In the Bhagavatam we see the whole universe is populated with different types of living entities, including plants, animals, and humans, or humanoid creatures, all sorts of persons. In fact, there are 400,000 types of human creatures, human-like creatures in the universe. That means they have higher intelligence. And they have free will, they have karmas, etc. So there's 400,000 species of these creatures running around the universe, and we're one of them. And there's so many others. In fact, some are very close to us. There's creatures just above us. It's described there's Gandharvas with wings. There's Rakshasas who can change their shape at will and disappear. And usually they're very, very fierce creatures, like vampires or something. And there's Yakshas and Siddhas, Chananas, Vidyadharas, many, many other creatures. There are also some of them are described in the Bhagavatam, all with great powers and with bodies which may look a little strange to us. Small bodies, big bodies, etc. And with a lot of powers also, what we call mystic powers. They can appear and disappear. They can travel very quickly throughout the universe and things like this. So that's just above us. There's many types of creatures like this. Some of them are benefic and some of them are malefic. Therefore we get ghosts and other things in this region also. That's quite low actually. And above that there's higher beings. The devas are actually above this. They're above these creatures. So they have more powers and they are more subtle. They're more filled with goodness and sattva mode. And they exist also in this universe. And we cannot even see them. We can't detect them. And we cannot detect their planet also. It's invisible to us with our gross material eyes. Yet all these creatures exist in the universe. At the top is Lord Brahma. And Brahma is so great and so subtle that even the devas have difficulty seeing him. There's one form of Brahma that no one can see. The devas cannot even conceive of him. He's so subtle in this body. So Brahma Loka is a very subtle planet, and the lower beings in this universe, even the devas, have difficulty understanding what is at the top of this universe, who is in control of the universe. So the topmost planet in the universe, the material planet, is this Brahma Loka. And there's the Lord Brahma who is carrying out and manifesting and maintaining this creation. That is this material world with all the living entities in it. And below him are all sorts of rishis and sages, and then devas, double of devas like Indra, etc. And below them, the malefic beings like Rakshasas and others. And then we have Earth planet here with us on it. And then below us we have planets also, levels of existence, which are basically sinful, full of darkness and ignorance. And yet there's intelligent beings on them also, very intelligent beings in lower planetary systems. But they don't follow Dharma at all. They're pretty adharmic. No respect for anything except enjoyment. So basically we have 14 planets, planetary systems, or levels of existence, which we can't even see with our eyes. All we can see is this level here, and even we can't even see this level properly, which is called the Bhuloka. In the fifth canto of Bhagavatam there is a description of Bhuloka, and that Bhuloka is a little different from what we see. There's all sorts of places which are like heavenly planets existing simultaneously on this, on our level, but we can't even approach those levels. So actually we see a very little section of this particular level of existence. And there's heavenly spheres, there's different dvipas, etc. And then above us, there's more subtle areas, planets, and the devas exist up above. And below us are the demonic elements with great enjoyment and great powers also. And we cannot see them either. So we're just one type of creature in this one universe. And of course, there's many other, millions and millions of other universes also going on in the same way. So the human beings are caught in the middle, and the devas are up above. They're in the sattvic mode. They are following the orders of the Supreme Lord, executing his orders, trying to institute dharma, our religious principles, into the universe. Order for the Supreme Lord means to follow some religious principles. It doesn't mean simply to put order, like managerial orders, into everything, but it's actually got some moral principles behind it and some spiritual principles behind it. So the devas are willing to follow this. So they execute the orders of the Lord very carefully. So they get the favor of the Lord. The Lord is on their side. And the demons, they don't want to follow these orders. They think, why we should follow some sort of strictures? Why should we get limited in our freedom? Let us ignore the Lord. We'll enjoy, but we'll enjoy without any rules and regulations. Why do we need someone to tell us what to do? So they ignore the orders of the Lord or the laws of the Lord, and they simply go out and try to enjoy on their own, independently of the Lord. So these are the asuras. And they're also very powerful. Just like the devas are powerful, the demons are also very powerful. And sometimes they actually get control of the upper planetary systems, and they get control of the devas' regions. And at that time, then the devas have to call out for help. So they go to Lord Brahma, and they go to ask him for some help. And Lord Brahma calls on Lord Vishnu or Krishna. And then the Lord will appear as avatar into this material world, and he'll create order again. So when the devas somehow or other lose power, it's a rather dangerous position in the universe, because the demons control everything, and they can destroy. If a dharma takes control, then generally the universe will all go towards destruction, because there's no law and order, and it's only meant for enjoyment. So everything begins to decline very quickly. So the Lord doesn't want that. He wants the material universe to go on in a regular manner. And therefore the Lord appears again in the material world with a particular purpose. That is to control the demons and to restore the devas in their proper position, to give some relief to the devotees. So we see all the different avatar forms of the Lord. They come to do this. We have Varaha fighting with Hiranyaksha to restore order and put the earth, Bhuloka, back in its proper position. And we find, of course, Ranikasipu gets killed by Narasimhadev because he's harassing Prahlad, and he's also trying to control the universe with his great powers that he got from Lord Brahma. And Bali Maharaj, he is conquered by Vamanadev because Bali also got control of the heavenly planets and started creating havoc by harassing the followers of Dharma and the Brahmins. So Vamana came and conquered over him and converted him into a devotee. So in this way we find the appearances of the Supreme Lord to conquer over the demons. And when the Lord comes as Krishna, which is ultimately the whole aim of all these descriptions, to describe the appearance of Lord Krishna, Krishna also comes, and he also kills the demons. He kills Kamsa and Shishupal and so many other big demons. And throughout his pastimes we find he is combating the demons and controlling them. And he's instituting Dharma by teaching Bhagavad Gita, giving teachings to all sorts of people. Actually, though these are the reasons for the Lord's appearance, ultimately the reason for the Lord's appearance is because of his enjoyment of pastimes. That's his ultimate reason. These are external reasons to destroy the demons and protect the devotees, etc. Ultimately, the Lord likes to express his joy in association with devotees. So therefore, that is expressed with what we call lila, certain activities in exchange of loving relationship with his devotee. So then expression of that love is a lila. So the Lord comes into this material world and displays lila. And the devotees of the Lord can appreciate that. And then devotees get satisfaction from that. So that is ultimately the reason for the Lord's appearance, to please the devotees and to himself get pleasure from performance of pastimes. So in this way the Lord, though he is invisible to people in the material world, by his great mercy, He appears in the material world so that everyone can see him, even though he is spiritual and unavailable to anyone in the material world. And he's untouched by material nature at all times. The Lord can appear within the material world and still be untouched and be visible to everyone and interact with the demons and the materialists and everything and still remain 100% pure. So this is the quality of the Supreme Lord, inconceivable power. The Supreme Lord is killing demons. He's associating with materialism by killing the demons. Yet he's completely pure. And he's still in his dham. He's still in his transcendental realm. He never leaves his transcendental realm. So by the inconceivable nature of the Lord, he can do this. Remain pure. Remain in his own pastimes, etc. Untouched by material energy, uncontaminated. And yet, he can appear in the material world and everyone can see him. And he can even kill the demons. And yet, he is completely pure. So this is astonishing to the everyone. It's astonishing to the devotees. It's astonishing to the demons also that someone can do this. And the devotees derive great pleasure in this appearance of the Supreme Lord. So avatar actually means one who descends. Avatar comes from avatirna. Avatirna means one who comes down. Comes down. So the Lord doesn't come down physically, in a sense, but he appears from the spiritual world into the material world. The material world is considered inferior. So in that sense, the Lord is coming down, making his appearance on a lower level. The true place of the Supreme Lord is in the spiritual world. But he comes into the material world, which actually no one belongs in the material world. The jivas don't belong here, nor does the Supreme Lord. Yet the Lord comes into the material world. But though he comes in the material world, he is not affected by it. He's not taken a material body. He's not affected by karma or anything. He still remains 100% in the spiritual world, even though he's in the material world. So that is the power of the Supreme Lord. He can do such a thing. We cannot do that. So the Lord does this. Why? Why is he doing all this? He's doing it for his pastimes. So therefore it says, Atma Sukhaya, for his own happiness. The Lord is doing all this, coming as avatar in the material world. And he does it for protection of the devotees. He does it for restoring the earth to its proper position. And so it can increase. And that's bhuti. So the Lord has many purposes to fulfill at the same time. Anyway, the material world is a place where there's always conflicts going on. So on the small level, we have conflicts like wars on this earth and quarrels among individuals and families and nations, etc. That goes on all the time in the material world, our level. And on the larger level, we'll have big conflicts between the devas and the demons, which is also going on all the time. They're all having these problems all the time. And so even the devas are not safe. Even the heavenly spheres are not really safe because the demons come up sometimes and they attack. And generally it's better than here, but still they get disturbed also. So in this way, the whole universe is always in this conflict between the forces of good and the forces of evil. So nowhere in the material world will have absolute peace, and very difficult to find that in the material world. Even up to Lord Brahma, Brahma is there sitting very peacefully. No one can approach him. Yet all the devas have to come up there and complain to him all the time. Hey, please help us, because we're having problems. And Brahma has to make some arrangement to help out the devas in the lower level and get rid of the demons and help the people. And so there's always some problem in this material universe. It is not free from disturbance, even in the highest levels. So why is that? Why do we have a world like this where there's all these problems? And that is because basically the souls, the jivas in this material world have various tendencies. They have particular desires. Every jiva is an individual. He's not like everybody else. He's got his own little desires. And some of those jivas have desires like the asuras. And they want to enjoy nicely, as much as they can, and without restrictions. These become the asuras. And some of them are very great. They have very great powers. And therefore they're able to fight with the devas, who are also very powerful, and they can actually conquer them sometimes. They have great powers. and the other jivas, other souls, they choose to follow the orders of the Lord by their free will. These are the devas, devotees of the Lord. So because of our free will, therefore, we divide into two categories. Either we accept the Lord's orders or we reject the Lord's orders. And then there's a conflict between the two groups. And we'll find the conflict on this earth also. Basically, this is a big conflict taking place between those who follow, accept the Lord, and those who don't accept the Lord. And this was the conflict in Battle of Kurukshetra. Duryodhana and Dhritarasa, they didn't want to follow Dharma. Though they appeared to follow in some sense of the word by following Kshatriya codes, codes of Kshatriyas, ultimately they rejected Krishna. They rejected the final order of the Lord. They didn't want to follow. And the Pandavas, they were following the Lord. Arjuna said, I will follow. Whatever you say, I will do. If you tell me to fight, I will fight. If you tell me not to fight, I will not fight. Whatever you want, I will follow. So the Pandavas were subservient to the Lord. And Duryodhana's brothers were not. And there was a conflict there. Dharma and Dharma. So of course, in the modern world, it's more difficult to find such conflicts of Dharma and Adharma, because everything is mixed with Adharma in the material world, and all nations have Adharma in them. And so when nations fight, it's not a conflict between Dharma and Adharma, it's Adharma against Adharma, basically, in the modern world. So we don't find such things. But we do know that some places are more favorable for worshipping the Lord, some places are less favorable for worshipping the Lord. So, in other words, some countries will be more favorably inclined towards Dharma, others will be less inclined towards Dharma. So we have a conflict between Dharma and Adharma at all times. Nevertheless, though this is so, those who are following the path of Dharma should not be discouraged. Because even it's not a good position. Of course, in Kali Yuga, I think it's very bad. In our particular age, it's very bad because of the predominance of asuric elements, adharma, etc. It is bad. Kali Yuga is full of faults. Still, the devotee should not be discouraged, because the Lord makes arrangement in all circumstances. Just as we may think, this is not very nice, let us go to a higher planet. Then we can enjoy better. Then we can follow Dharma better. Let's go to the Devalokas, and then we can all be follow Dharma better. But we find even the Devas are not satisfied. They're praying, let's come back to the earth. It's easier to follow Dharma down here, because up there we forget easily. So peaceful, too peaceful. Here we can remember that we should get out of this material world at least. So wherever we go in the universe, peaceful situation, not peaceful, there's always some problem there. So we should not complain of our situation in Kali Yuga that's so bad, therefore it's hopeless, or why am I stuck in this particular body in this particular age. The Lord makes arrangements for all serious persons and very sincere persons. He makes arrangements for everybody. So in this age of Kali, though it is very bad, there's a lot of adharma around, there's no particular government which is supporting Dharma nicely, still the Lord makes arrangements for the devotees. So he does that by propagating Yuga Dharma. Yuga Dharma means a particular process of religious development, which is practical for us in this age. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come as avatar, and he's propagated Nam Sankirtan as the practical process for spiritual development in this age. So though it's a very bad age, there's also an easy process to follow by which we can advance. It is much easier than yoga and meditation and sacrifice and worship of the deity. That is simply chanting the name of the Lord. So this is the particular process we can take shelter of in the age of Kali. A difficult age, but by taking shelter of this process, we get some advantage. It's an easier process, a more direct process than any other processes to realize the Supreme Lord. So therefore, everything is bad in Kali Yuga, but this Nam Sankirtan is the great blessing. It's something very easy for us to do. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and he gave this Nam Sankirtan movement. So therefore we're very fortunate. Not only we get Nam Sankirtan, but we get special blessings from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Nam Sankirtan is Yuga Dharma that he manifests, but Lord Chaitanya also is very special because he's considered to be more merciful than the normal avatars of the Lord. Of course, the Lord is always merciful, but Lord Chaitanya has this particular mercy element in him, which he tries to or wants to save all of the souls of this world, even the unqualified. He is very willing to help them out, even if they are sinful. So Lord Chaitanya is very, very merciful. And not only that, not only is he the most merciful, but he's also willing to give the highest realization of God. That is the realization of Krishna and his Madhurya Rupa form in association of the gopis and the cowherd boys and Goloka Vrindavan. And that is not usually given to anyone. Very rare. Rupa Goswami says in Nectar of Devotion that actually, generally, people will develop love of Godhead and they'll go to Vaikuntha. That's a normal position. And one will be a das there. This is the normal situation for the jivas. It's very rare they go beyond that and develop Sakya Rasa or Vatsalya Rasa or Madhurya Rasa. Very rare. But when Krishna comes, he reveals everything when he comes in Swayam Rupa form, which is once in the day of Brahma. And we'll do that only once in a day. And then Lord Chaitanya comes after that and he reveals that and makes it accessible to the jivas. So when Lord Chaitanya comes, therefore, he gives the mercy by which we can actually realize Krishna in that Madhurya form, which is not available to all the other yugas and all the other times, etc. But after Krishna comes in that form, then Lord Chaitanya makes it available to everyone. So in this way, he's also all merciful. And that is available through chanting the holy name. Through chanting the holy name, not only is it Yuga Dharma, but in this particular age, it is also the means by which we can realize Radha and Krishna. So it's a very, very special time we're in. So unfortunate age, but also very fortunate because we get the opportunity to realize Radha and Krishna and through the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so a very special age also. Okay, any question there?
The particular realm of the living is Guruloka. Are we coexisting with many other living entities? You know, it's like, for instance, these UFO type personalities. I mean, are they coming from the same realm or the subterranean heavenly planets?
Mm-hmm. Where are those coming from? Well, it's difficult to say. Since we haven't, no one's really asked them, I guess. Or they do, they may give strange answers to us also, and whatever. But like Sadabhuta, his idea is that many of them that are described are not actually of a deva quality. Devas are generally benefic creatures, and some of these are not very benefic because they kidnap people and abduct them in their sleep and do experiments on them, make hybrids, and they're breeding some, you know, hybrid between them and us or something. They're doing all sorts of mysterious things that we can't figure out. There's some research done on it by some you know, university people. The conclusion was they are actually abducting people and they're actually carrying out experiments on people. And they're doing that on a large scale. Let's say millions of people are having this experience of getting abducted, etc. Maybe, you know, interviewing so many people, they all have similar experiences and they don't know each other. And they're all coming out with the same scenario of what happens. They go up and then they get, you know, they get lose control and then they, you know, so many things happen. Anyway, his conclusion was they're doing all these weird things. So it does not look, that's what Davis would do. So therefore his conclusion was that it must be the Asuric elements, or if not Asuric, at least people who are kind of on our level or maybe a little bit above, but not certainly on that sattvic level. Maybe on rajasic level or rajasic tamasic mixed level. Maybe a slight sattva level, something like that, but not definitely on the deva level, because they don't need to do things like that on the deva level. They have much more power than that. and to not interfere with the human beings in that way. He said this looks like the more asuric elements or something, possibly from lower planets or possibly from somewhere on our level also, from some other deepas who are they're having some problems of some sort. Of course, it's not that all those people have similar experiences. Some do have other experiences, that of very advanced beings from other places. They say they're from certain stars in the universe or whatever. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. And they're more benefic personalities in general. And they're just concerned about our welfare. And even there, we get different levels of persons also. They ask them about God. Some people ask them. They get, you know, they go there and they ask them about God. Their God basically is, they all accept God. They all accept God. But usually it's a rather impersonal God. They know there's a controller. They know there's a law in the universe. They all accept that. But they don't want to go beyond that and say he's a person or anything like that. Some, yes, there's something up there that's doing it, but they don't quite know themselves what it is. So in other words, there are even higher than them, there are other beings above them. So you can say they're not so advanced in that way. They've got some higher perspective than we have, but not ultimately the highest. And of course, it is said that the other group, that there is a very demonic group. In other words, they're having a war also. It's a war between the good ones and the bad ones among the UFO groups. Some of the planets are controlled by one group, some by the other, and they're having a continual war for billions of years also. So that's what they say. Anyway. And one group is the group which is basically for enjoyment. Exploitation, enjoyment. And that's one group, and the other group is keep the order of the universe. Something like that. There's a deva sort of conflict going on.
Subterranean heavenly planets below Blue Loka?
Yeah. Theoretically, of course, above and below is a little bit misleading, perhaps, because it's described in Bhagavatam like that. It goes up, 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 and gradually so many yojanas is up and so many yojanas is down, and we get these different realms. But, of course, if we go up on our satellite and we take pictures, we don't see anything like that. We just see, you know, space up there and everything. So, obviously, it has to be on a more subtle level. Whatever it is, and maybe in terms of yojanas even, maybe a little misleading, maybe it's more in terms of densities or something like that, and in subtle bodies and things like that, so they become more and more fine and fine as you go. And so therefore distance itself may be a little bit misleading, because they could intersect with our place here and we won't even know it, if they're in a different density, so it doesn't, distance doesn't matter at that point.
I think vertebrae is multi-dimensional. There may be so many different dimensions coexisting.
Yeah. It's hard for us to imagine what that is, but nevertheless, it can be like that. And distance itself becomes a little bit meaningless at that point where we have multi-dimensions, which may not even have distance as we know it. And it may not be in the same, you know, concept. Like time, even time, time and distance lose their, you know, meaning in one sense.
Do you still have a center or
is
it a university or something like that in Texas?
No, there's nothing in there is one college by Dunavir. Where is that? He has a college of some sort. It's not in Texas, I don't think.
Isn't that Nashville?
Huh?
I think he's in Mississippi.
It's not in Texas, I don't think. There's one college there that Dunavir Goswami is managing. I don't think it's in Texas, somewhere else. Oh, well, of course, there's Christians everywhere, but conflict, no, I don't think so. No conflict. People keep them themselves, more or less.
Lord comes to this universe,
there are many universities, he must give it to all the universities. Yeah, actually, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya says, the Lord is always appearing somewhere. If Krishna has his lila here and disappears, that's not the end. He has a lila somewhere else after that, and after that he's in another universe, after that he's in another universe, and after that he's not. So he's continually somewhere in the material realm in some universe performing pastimes. His pastimes are continuous. But for us it looks, oh, he's gone, it's finished, but it's not. Then he appears in another universe and goes through his pastimes, then he disappears and goes into another universe. So he's circulating throughout the universe doing this. But it's not an effort for the Lord. This is no problem for the Lord. He can do it without any effort at all. And simultaneously, he's in the spiritual world. He never leaves the spiritual world. And he can also be in the material world simultaneously.
You mentioned that the deva, they follow the instructions of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the asuras, they don't follow. But though devas, they follow sometimes, they still lose it. They lose their...
devas.
Yeah. Devas. Yeah. Like some people may wonder, but if they're following the God's instructions, like why should they lose them? They should be always victorious.
Oh, yeah. Well, then the Lord comes and helps them. Ultimately, they're victorious. But in the material world, is such that we have gunas, you know, and the gunas, there's sattva, raja, tama, guna, goodness, passion, ignorance. And it's a mixture in the universe. And sometimes tama becomes prominent, sometimes sattva becomes prominent. And it's always changing. This is the nature of the material world. And we see, for instance, how time goes. We get satya yuga, treta yuga, dwarpa yuga, kali yuga. And as we go on into Kali Yuga, more and more Adharma comes up. Huh? So the nature of matter and universe is that somehow as we go on, tamas comes up and takes control. And then sattva is restored again. And then gradually declines again. So periodically the tamasic elements will rise up and get control. Then the Lord does something and pushes it back into place again. And he comes as avatar and restores order. Then it goes on like this. Then it goes down again. And then the tamasic elements rise up. And the Lord has to come and do something. Hmm? It's just the nature of the material world, basically covered by ignorance. So sometimes they'll get control. Then the Lord will come and restore, put Dharma in control again.
Because karma always happens, people's
karma take place. The karmas are there, so many things. Will of the Lord, nature of material, nature of the gunas, everything is combined like this. And then we get, you know, increase of a Dharma as time goes on.
In one of our programs, this question came up. Is Krishna consciousness, is it a religion or is it a science?
Is it there?
Is it a religion or is it science?
Religion.
Or is it science? Like, how do we actually answer?
Well, it depends on your definition of what is science and what is religion, I suppose. Science, of course, they will say, no, it's not a science. Because it's not based upon empirical observations. And they'll say a science is based upon empirical observations and repetitive experiments that you can demonstrate. And religion can't do that in the strict sense of the term. You can't just take a group of people and carry out an experiment and get a particular result each time. It's not so easy as that. Huh? So it's not quite in the same realm. Of course, some sciences are like that also. And ultimately, all science ends up a little bit like that. We cannot demonstrate everything. And even come up with certain results all the time. Even some parts of science are like that. However, that's the tendency, is to think of it in that way. And if anything is, if we can point out a discrepancy, we may reject it, you know, based on that. So even some scientists do some very rigorous investigations of things. Other scientists won't accept it. They'll keep challenging it and say, no, it cannot be like that because of their prejudice. And they'll find some fault someplace and reject everything. Huh? Like that. There's one scientist, he's a doctor. His name is Ian Stevenson. And he was a regular doctor, but then he got interested in these cases of childhood recollections of previous lifetimes. So he began investigating very seriously this. And he got, through his life, he's done like almost 3,000 cases. And those which are, he's a scientist, so he's very particular to find cases which are foolproof, that, you know, it's not that somebody cheated and parents told the children to say like this. You know, so he rejects all cases which were weak. And he tries to take only strong cases where children don't know anything about anything and parents don't know anything either, and somehow their children recollect something in another place and it can be proved that these people existed somewhere else in some other town or village like that, independent of them, with no contact at all. And so he's taken many cases like that, and he methodically does everything, you know, like a scientist, and rejects all the bogus cases or weak cases or whatever, and puts only the strong cases there. And he personally goes and investigates or sends somebody there to interview and record all the information very, very accurately. And so he has all these cases there. In spite of that, people will attack him. And they'll find some reason to attack something in his methodology or whatever. They'll attack and they'll try to destroy all. Because what it points to is that we go from body to body.
And that's a weird concept for a scientist, because we're not even accepting a soul yet. So that one could go from body to body, and something, your personality could go from body to body, is ridiculous to the scientists. So some scientists will attack that, and they'll try to dismiss it, and they'll find some little fault in some of his methodology, make up some theory, another theory, to defeat the aspect that, could be caused by a soul going from body to body. And so he got very discouraged by the whole thing. He does all this work, and then some people will just kind of pull it apart, rather than accept the obvious, what seems to be obvious. They'll try to pull it apart in spite of that. And so he get very discouraged. But he has very remarkable cases. And if one reads with an open mind, then after that one will say, well, it must be true. But yet, scientists will go through the whole thing, and they'll try to find some way of negating it, stretching things here, pulling things here, to try to defeat.
Maharaj, in the Bible, there was supposed to be a scripture called the Aquarian Gospel, supposed to cover reincarnation.
Well, that Aquarian Gospel actually was a channeled thing, a recent thing in the modern age. It was channeled by somebody, which nobody will accept it. An authoritative thing is somebody seems to get some information in his head and writes it down. But that's not one of the lost scriptures, but it's something that they can claim like that, but actually it was written by someone in the modern age who channeled some information from somewhere. Yeah.
On that question over here, religion and science, in this country, possibly decade ago,
Hiscom, or
Hare Krishna, and
Scientology
were approved by Australian judges as a religion.
Mm-hmm.
Has that occurred in America?
I'm assuming you're from America. Even in Russia? It's an authorized religion in Russia, even. It was approved as a religion even in Russia. That's another thing, because usually religion will take as a very ambiguous type of process or something like that. So Prabhupada calls it a science, because it is more particular. We have a definition of who is God. We have a definition of the self. We have a very particular process to follow, bhakti, by which we can get particular results. So because it's particularized and quite detailed, then we can call it a science, also a religious science, a science of understanding soul and God, which are not subject to normal empirical verification, but nevertheless they do exist, and they have their own process, particular process and particular goal. It's interesting to note that actually just recently some scientists in Britain, they were of course hired by some Christian group, but they did a study. They were neutral. They were not one way or the other. But they did a study on near-death experience, and they took cases of it. And they rejected some cases, and they took some cases they thought were good. And then based on that, their conclusion was, there is something beyond the material body that exists after you die, or after the near-death experience. They come back to the body, of course, but they're clinically dead, and the brain is not operating in these cases of near-death experience. And yet they do observe, and they are able to gather knowledge, and it can also be verified. And when they come back to the body, then what happened if they're clinically dead? So there's something existing beyond, some mechanism of perception which exists beyond the brain and the senses. So the scientists, they accepted, yes, there is something else besides the material body. They came to that conclusion. Of course, that doesn't mean it's a soul, but at least they accepted there's other aspects of the human personality which exists beyond the material body, as we know it, at least. And that was recently a conclusion of some doctors. And did investigation. I don't know. They were supposed to come out with a medical report and publish it in some prestigious medical journal. But that was their conclusion. But then, of course, someone will attack that. Some scientists will attack that and say this was, they did this faulty or that faulty. So there's so many ways in which you can find fault also. But there are, we see, that we cannot directly prove the existence of soul or anything. by testimony of people and their experiences, to some degree we can see that people do have experiences which indicate something like that, even in the modern world. And there's a prediction by some people that within the next 20 years, the existence of soul, or at least if not soul, at least some subtle something or other, which carries the personality, exists separately from the body, that will be commonly accepted in science also.
Actually, they can actually follow where someone goes in their astral body,
Map
where they go to different places.
Yeah. Well, of course, that's not said by science, but if people have done this, they've also in their astral body gone out and traced people when they die, and they've found certain places they go, which corresponds more or less to what's in Bhagavatam.
Normally, in the material world, behind any activity, they get some motivation, they must be deserving. Without the motivation of the people.